I'm Laura Kronk. If you don't know me, I am from Ketchikan, and so's Doug. That's why he's like, I was giving him a bad time. And my talk today is on Enjoy Inward Peace and Poise. It's from Psalm 119, 165. Great peace have those who love the Lord, or who love your law and the Lord, and nothing shall make them stumble. And if you've heard me speak with Nancy before at one of the conferences, I think this is the sixth time I've spoken, and I've said this before if you were here on Thursday night. Anytime she gives me a topic, and I think most of the speakers kind of feel this, there's this challenge that comes with it, which, you know, bless Nancy's heart, that's what she's about, right? Challenging us, and get deeper with the Lord. And this one was no, you know, I mean, it was there. It was no option. So, and I'm an emoter. I'm one of my gifts is exhortation. And I love connecting with people. I love discussing with people and talking and being, you know, being there for them. I feel like I have that empathy. And I could not find my connection with this, which, looking back on it, and Kim goes, I heard that. And, oh, that was Janet, okay. And so what I did, I love words. I love their meanings. I love their nuances. I love their origin. I love just everything about them. My kids would laugh when they were little, and it's like, Mom, what's this word mean? And I make them go look it up, and then we talk about it. So I kind of dove into the words, you know, and it was like, then it was becoming very dry and very educational, which is not me. So Sunday night, Les got home. He had been gone, and this is like a week ago Sunday. And I am sharing with him. Actually, I was whining to him. This isn't working. I can't get a hold of it. I can't find my connection with this. And the wise man that he is, and he knows me very well, and he said to me, okay, when was the last time you felt peace and poise? He said, you have it all the time, but to a greater extent. When was that last time? And I said, in February, last February, not this, so a little over a year ago, just before I had surgery. And he's like, okay. And why did you not have that peace and poise in your surgery 10 years ago? And I started crying. It's like, oh, found it. Thank you, Les. I'm going to give you history, and kind of like Debbie said, she doesn't know all the pieces, but she knows enough to know the joy that goes with it. So I'm going to give you backstory. I have Crohn's disease, and if you know anything about Crohn's disease, it's in the ulcer. If anybody has a hard time with medical messy descriptions, it's okay if you leave, because I have messy medical history, okay? And Crohn's disease is part of the, it's related to ulcerative colitis. Crohn's disease are part of irritable bowel disease. And it's your whole digestive system from top to bottom, literally. And I was diagnosed with it almost 34 years ago, shortly after my second son was born. In that 34 years, I have been blessed with the first part of it being very mild and very controllable. But it got to the point where it was really impacting my life. Really, if you've seen any of those commercials, you know, you're just managing it. Oh yeah, that was me. And I got to the point in 2009 where my doc said, we really need to go in and take out the diseased part. With ulcerative colitis, you can take out the diseased part and you're done. With Crohn's, it's still there. So 2009, I'm in a hospital in Seattle. I've just had a surgery that took out all of my large intestine except 9 inches, the end 9 inches. And my 4 to 5 day stay after surgery ended up being 9.5. Les said 10 yesterday, but that extra half a day, that was important. And while I was there, I didn't have complications, I had challenges. My body was really slow to wake up after surgery and function. And, you know, they're looking for bowel sounds. They're looking for, every day, have you passed gas? And finally I'm like, you know what? When I pass gas, I will go to the roof of this hospital and announce it to the town, trust me. You know, and so stuff was not moving. And I had tests. I had to make sure everything was going right. I was throwing up. I was on 3 anti-nausea meds, 2 that they were giving me intravenously every 2 hours, different ones, and I had a patch. And that made my throwing up, my puking, go from about every 3 to 4 minutes to every 15 to 20 minutes. I had an NG tube that they inserted into my stomach to remove the bile from my stomach because stuff wasn't going passing through. And I have a really bad gag reflex. I can gag when I brush my teeth. And every time I swallowed, I would gag and throw up. Every time I would talk, I would gag and throw up. And this NG tube made me feel so claustrophobic that I was constantly on the verge of a panic attack. I mean, it was all I could do. And I finally had to just go close my eyes and go to that space with God and breathe. And the only thing I could say to get through it was just Jesus. It was just like, okay, Lord. Anytime it would well up in me, it was like, Jesus. And I would just breathe. And longest 17 hours of my life. And when the doc came in and said, okay, you know, we think we got most of this out. We're good. And I talked to it was a teaching hospital, so I had pods of people. I talked to the main doctor, and he said, yeah, we can take it out. And when she took it out, I cried. I'm like, thank you. I hadn't eaten, and because stuff wasn't moving. So day 7, they decided to put a PICC line in and give me TPN, total patient nutrition. Because in order for your body to heal, it needs calories. In fact, when you're healing from a surgery or a major wound, you need more calories. You need more protein. And so they were worried that we were going to end up in this negative downward spiral. So the nurse that came in and prepared it said to me, we're going to go in, we're going to hit the vein, we're going to blah, blah, blah. And she said, and if we don't hit the vein, we'll hit a nerve. And you will know when this happens because your body will levitate off the bed. They tried it twice. And Les said, never seen anybody levitate before, but that was pretty amazing. And I said, you should have felt it on my end. It was like an electric shock going through your whole body. And seriously, I'm sure I levitated off of that bed. And like I said, they tried it twice. It's like an electric shock. You know, it seriously is. And it's a central nerve, so it hits your whole body. I mean, it's like, yeah. It was a little, you know, and it was quick. I mean, it wasn't like a long drawn out, you know, like you see tasers in movies and stuff. I mean, it was quick, and she's like, okay, you know, because then immediately when that happens, of course, my movement and hers, it pulled it back off of that. So in the midst of all of this, I did not hear or feel God's presence at all. And at one point I told somebody, I said, I wish I had the testimony that said God was with me and I got through it and it was so amazing. No. And it was really hard because I was so used to feeling God, feeling his presence, feeling his love and his comfort. And there was nothing. I mean, the air was still around me. And I could feel myself with all of this stuff that's going on start sinking into despair and depression and disappointment and doubt. And I knew I couldn't go there. how many of you know if you start on that, it's this whirlpool that sucks you down, and it is so hard to get out of that. So I'm sitting in the bed, got my puke bucket, you know, everything else. And I'm like, okay, what do I know? Since I'm not feeling anything. And we charismatic Pentecostal types were really big into, did you feel the Lord move? You know, I really don't feel like the Lord's leading to me to do this, or I feel like the Lord's telling me, right? When you don't have that, you feel blind. So what do I know? Okay. I know that he loves me. I know that he will never leave me or forsake me. I know that he only has my best interest at heart. And I could not give you chapter and verse in any of those things. I was on drugs, major drugs. But, and my computer died, hold on. But those were what I knew. I know those things. And then when I said those, I asked myself, do I really believe that God loves me? I mean, here I am in this situation, not seeing, not hearing from him, right? Yeah, I do. Do I really believe that he'll never leave me and never forsake me? Yeah, I do. And do I believe that he only has good things for me, even if it doesn't look like good things at the time? Yeah, I do. And that's when I really started thinking about it. And if you heard Les talk yesterday, I really realized that God is God. And I say that to people and everybody goes, yeah. And I go, no, no, no. Listen to me. God is God. He doesn't need me. He does a pretty good job without me, right? I mean, he doesn't need me. He doesn't need any of us. But he loves us, and he wants to be a part of his plans, and he wants us to be a part of what he's doing. And like us with our children, if you have children, he wants us to be near him and share with him and celebrate with him. And so realizing that God was God and I was going to be okay. And when Les shared yesterday that I had shared that with him, I asked him last night, I said, okay, when did I share that with you? And he said, when you were talking about what you had gone through with what you know. And I'm like, I don't remember that. Of course, again, I was on a lot of drugs. I was in pain, right? And that changed my life. That changed my heart. It didn't change the circumstances, but it changed my heart. And after the second failure on the pick line, the next day, we're one more loop around the nurse's station, and I'm pushing my IV stand that Les used to call my tree of life because there were so many things hanging from this IV stand. I mean, they were double, triple hanging stuff, right? And we're once more around the nurse's station. And I told him, I said, maybe I don't have enough faith. And I'm looking for something that is wrong with me that I'm not seeing, hearing, feeling from God, right? And he says to me, Laura, he said, there are so many people praying for you right now and lifting you up and covering you. You just need to rest in God and heal. And I remember thinking as we're walking, oh, that's kind of like Moses and Aaron and Hur, the story about when they were fighting the Amalekites. And as long as Moses kept his staff up, they won. If he dropped his staff, they lost. They were losing. It was a fight that lasted all day. I don't know about you, but I don't think I could hold. I was doing the flag last night, and pretty soon I'm like, I gotta stop. My arms are killing, right? And so his brother and his father-in-law came alongside him, pushed up a rock for him to lean against because he had to keep standing, right? Okay, we'll give you a little support. And they held up his arms. And I thought, oh, okay, it's like Moses and Aaron and Hur. And the next morning, good friend of mine, I call her a sister of my soul, called to see how I was doing. And I was telling her about Les and I's conversation the night before and how I was just struggling with not hearing God and maybe it's me and I don't have enough faith. And then I told, and she said, and I told her what Les said. And she said, oh, like Moses and Aaron and her. It's the first confirmation that I had had in 8 days. And I heard this still small voice say to me, and how'd that turn out? And I smiled and I said, they won. And I was out of the hospital the next day. Because within a day and a half, everything started working. They won. And I remember talking to a former pastor about it, and I said something to the effect of, you know, I didn't have a choice. I had to trust God. And he said, you had a choice. And I said, no, I didn't. And he said, I understand. He said, but you had a choice. He said, you could have done like Job's comforter said to him and cursed God and said, just kill me now. You could have been angry at God. You could have, you know, but instead you chose to seek him. You went to what you knew, even though your heart was not working. Wow. And God blessed you with that, right? So, fast forward. I'm scrolling. I wish I could say that the 9 years after that, well, 8 years, 9 years after that, were peace, love, and grooviness, and that you can tell how old I am, right? I saw you like, yeah. that, you know, that God was with me and that, you know, they won, okay. But, and the first couple of years after surgery were really great. In fact, my son got married that summer, and my daughter-in-law said to my son, I've never seen your mom like this. And he goes, this is my mom. The way when she was so sick before, you know, that wasn't her. This is her. But as the years progressed and went on, with Crohn's patients, one of two things can happen. You can find a drug and be on it for 20 or 30 years, and it's awesome. Puts you in remission. You're great. Or you're one of those people, and it's about 50-50 split, that can be on a drug for a while, and it can work, and then it starts to taper off. And then you have to try another one, and it starts to taper off. Guess which one I was? The longest time I was on a drug that it was effective for me was 2.5 years. And found out ones that didn't work, and I could give you all of the terminology for it and everything else, but so about, let's see, a year, about 2 years ago, I was finally on my last real possible drug to put this in remission. And I had to go in for an infusion and got to know the infusion suite ladies really well. And it just, I finally emailed my doc and I said, this is not working. And she said, come down, because I go to Seattle. Come down, we'll go in, take a look, see how it's doing, because maybe it's just slow and keeping up. And I know my body, especially after this long. And I'm like, okay. So went down, and she talked to me, and she said, let's, you know, we'll just reserve. And so I was telling her how I was feeling. And Crohn's symptoms mirror, in a lot of ways, fibromyalgia symptoms. So if you know anybody with fibro, with brain fog, joint pain, fatigue, flu-like symptoms, that I lived with that, okay? And I realize now on this side that how much pain I was in every day. And you just, you know, I had a nurse tell me one time I had pancreatitis and I had a moderate case. And I was in the hospital, it was after a procedure. And she said, I don't think you have pancreatitis. And she said, they came in because they'd put a stent in my common bile duct, and they wondered if the stent had moved, and that's what was causing me to throw up. And I was like, I mean, my stomach kind of hurts and my back hurts, but I don't think I'm in pain. So the nurse said, came in after they did the blood work. She came in, you got moderate hepatitis, not even mild, which usually, or not pancreatitis, sorry. No, not hepatitis. All those itises, I got so many, there's so many itises out there. And she said, so I put on your chart, whatever this woman says her pain level is, double it. And I'm like, why? And she goes, you have a really high pain tolerance. Most people with, you know, moderate pancreatitis are writhing around screaming in bed. And I said, I don't feel like I'm in pain, but, you know. So then she came in and she gave me a major pain shot. And 20 minutes later, she came in and I went, I was in pain. And anyway, so those kinds of things happening, right? Finally got to the last, to the Remicade, went down, went in, she took a look, and there's only one time when I had an allergic reaction to a medication I was on that I just said, knock me out. Normally I'm awake for my colonoscopies and my sigmoidoscopies. And she didn't get very far in, and she's like, oh, and I said, yeah. And so in 34 years of colonoscopies, sigmoidoscopies, it was the worst I'd ever seen it. And she said, I think you're right. And I said, yep, me too. And she was hoping that she went in and that my body was just catching up and the Remicade, right? And so she sent me to a surgeon. And Dr. Wallen's a Christian. And I didn't know that at the time. And his nurses are Christians. And that was such a blessing. You know, it really was. And it's one of those things where you kind of, you know how you kind of feel each other out and you just kind of, right, you know? And, but yeah, it was, by the time I left to fly home, it was, you know, he's like, I'll be praying for you. And I said, thank you, I'll be praying for you too. You're an awesome doctor. But scheduled the surgery, and I think this was probably in September. Were we down in September, babe? It's all kind of a blur because I was so sick. So September, October, anyway, scheduled surgery for January. December of, not this year, but last year, I was in ER twice, and I was so sick. In fact, this year I said to Les, I was really sick last Christmas, December. And he's like, yeah, you were. And I'm like, did we decorate? And he said, I tried. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember the box of ornaments sitting by the tree, and I didn't even have the energy to put one bulb on the tree. And so the day after Christmas Day was, I was in a lot of pain. I was just, something wasn't right. Went into ER day after Christmas. And they come in, was it the morning they came in? And like I said, it's a blur. And said, so how would you like to have your gallbladder out? Oh. And I'm like, what? When? And they said, well, today or tomorrow morning at the latest. And I was like, okay. And, but then I said, but I have ileostomy surgery scheduled in a month. In almost 5 weeks. So we called my surgeon, and that's a whole nother story. I was on pain meds and was on morphine, and I tried to call and couldn't put two words together. Finally, here, you talk to him. Yeah, and Les is just like, it's okay. He's then, Dr. Wallen, I understand. So we ended up rescheduling my ileostomy surgery for February, so 2 months out, and the next morning, I had emergency gallbladder surgery. And so I asked Les, I said, so when did you undecorate? Because I remember coming home 2 or 3 days after coming home from the hospital, and the tree was down. And he said, when you were in the hospital? And I'm like, okay. Again, pain meds, right? And my recovery from gallbladder surgery was tough physically on me. And it was my own fault. I pushed too hard. Everybody's like, oh, gallbladder surgery, 1 to 2 weeks, you're back, you're whatever. Baloney. I was like, mm-mm, you know, and no. And you think you can push, and you, yeah. We ended up 6 days after I got out of the hospital, so maybe a week and a half, almost 2 weeks after surgery, flying to Arizona to go down and visit Les's stepdad. And I ended up in just a lot of pain and a lot of, oh my gosh. And I'm like, okay, can I have surgery in 2 months? Can I, you know, and Dr. Wallen originally said, we can do it. We have to wait at least 4 weeks between surgeries. We could do it, but it's probably not best. And that's when I called and said, I can't do this. And he's like, I kind of figured. So we rescheduled for February. So now we're in February of, not this year, but last year, a little over a year ago. And I'm getting ready for ileostomy surgery, which if you don't know what an ileostomy is, and that's okay, most people don't, they remove all of your, I didn't have a whole lot of large intestines, but basically they remove your large intestine, your rectum, and your colon, or in your rectum, or your large intestine, rectum, and anus, and create a stoma. So I have a bag, and the risk of being TMI, I'll say, oh, you know, I have to go poop, unless it's like, you've already pooped, and I'm like, I know, I just have to go empty it, okay? And it's major surgery. I mean, it's was 7.5 hours that I was in there, because they have to go in and then close each layer, right? And then, you know, put the stoma in, which they're pulling part of your intestines out, and 7.5 hours, and 35% chance of the wound getting infected. And I was one of those 35%. And, but let me back up a little bit. I had such peace about this surgery. We went to see Black Panther the night before surgery with my kids. You know, it's like, let's go to the movie, right? And I knew, and there were major complications that can happen with this surgery. I mean, the list is pretty long. There's not a high risk of it. Obviously, there's a bunch of us walking around, but it could, right? And they have to tell you, this could go wrong, this could go wrong, you know. And I just had this peace. And because I knew from experience that God was going to be with me, and one way or another, however it turned out, that first surgery, I had to get to the point where no matter what happened, if I had to have ileostomy surgery then, it would be okay because God was with me. And, you know, I'm joking with people and I'm laughing, and they're kind of all looking at me like, what? And I'm like, you know, first of all, I knew it was coming sooner or later. And so I had time to prepare, watched a lot of YouTube videos, watched, you know, I mean, I knew my stuff, I'd done my homework. So surgery, hold on, I lost my train of thought. So I go through the surgery. My dad comes to visit me on Friday. Surgery was on Monday. And my dad came to visit on Friday. And he said, honey, I really hope this surgery works out for you. I hope that, you know, it really improves your life. And I said, Daddy, I already feel better today, 5 days after major surgery, in the hospital, than I did on Sunday, the day before surgery. And he's like, wow. One of the things that Les said, the brain fog that I had, 2 + 2 = blue. And I knew that wasn't right, but I wasn't quite sure why it wasn't right. And I'm, I, I love to interact with people. I love, I could not track conversations. I could be talking with somebody and very shortly into it, I would get exhausted because my brain couldn't keep up. And I liken it to my hard drive being so full that it's moving at snail speed, right? It's like, right? And it couldn't process frivolous little things like conversation, right? And during that 9 years, and especially the 2 years before I had surgery, my relationship with the Lord became so deep and so personal, out of self-defense, if nothing else. You know, it was the only way that I could get through. And to keep my center, to keep my disease was not my identity, even though it so horrifically impacted my life and my lifestyle. It was not my identity. My identity was in God. And so, going back to Les and I's conversation, okay, we're kind of caught up to last Sunday. And he said, so, where did the peace, where did that come from? You know, first he asked me, why didn't you have it 9 years ago? Where did that peace and poise that you had for this last surgery come from? And I had to go back and say, it started back there. And now I know where those scriptures are, right? He will never leave me. And he will never forsake me. Forsake means quit, leave entirely. Now you get into the words, right? Abandoned, desert. He wasn't going to desert me. Deuteronomy 31:6, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified of them, before the Lord your God is with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. That's the NIV. In the New American Standard, it says, he will never fail you or forsake you. He wants only good things for my life. Jeremiah 29:11-13, the Lord gave me this verse, gosh, shortly after I became a Christian over 40 years ago. I know the plans for you, declares the Lord, the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you, and you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. And Romans 8:28, all things work together for good for those who love God, requirement, and who are, second requirement, called according to his purpose. And 2 Corinthians 1:3-4, sorry about that. Praise be to God, to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received. And that is a verse that gets me through some tough times. It's like, okay, Lord, here's my experience, and hopefully I can help somebody else, right? And I skipped around. Let me find where I'm at. Two years ago, to tell you how sick I really was, I came to the Point to Hope conference, and I met Janet. And I think Debbie was probably the only one who really, that I confessed to how really sick I was. I was so, my symptoms, my goal was 3,000 steps a day. My goal. If I hit much more than that, I was wiped out for a couple of days. If I went to the grocery store, the post office, and maybe stopped in one, ran one other quick errand, I was wiped out for 2 days. I mean, I couldn't leave the house. I would get up, but there wasn't a lot. I had a spot on the couch. Les called it my nest, you know, and everything was around me. And bless this man's heart, I could not have done any of this without him. He fed me when I didn't want to eat. He fed me when I didn't have the energy to cook or make anything for myself. He prayed for me. He listened to me whine. He listened to me rant and rave. He listened to me cry. He held me when I cried. He went to almost every single major doctor's appointment with me. And part of that we learned early on was my brain was not functioning. Remember 2 + 2 = blue? And he was hearing different things than I was. And I was processing it emotionally, right? And I'd say, blah, blah, blah. And he'd go, no, that's not what the doctor said. The doctor said, and I'd go, oh, you're right. And so, and after I had my ileostomy surgery, he took 3 weeks off of work. And I mean, he was my nurse. Literally, he was my nurse because I told you about the infection. And we're headed to the doctor's office because a home health nurse came and said, I think this is infected. And I am sitting on a pillow and I am like keeping my bottom off the pillow and I am feeling so sick. If you've ever had a major infection in your body, your whole body just wants to go, right? And I was hurting. And we got to the doctor's office. My surgeon was in surgery, and it ended up going longer than usual. So I ended up, after a couple hours of sitting there, seeing his partner. And I really liked him, Dr. Medwell. So he's, okay, again, graphic, but he ended up having to cut the incision to let the infection out. And he said, this is going to hurt. He said, if I give you a local, the local's going to hurt more than just doing this. And I'm like, it's okay, go ahead. So I'm laying on my side, Les is right here, and I am holding onto his hands, and I am sobbing because he said, are you okay? And I said, I'm okay. I said, it hurts, but keep going if you need to. So he did, and then finally he's like, okay, that'll work, that's good. And he asked Les, he said, this is how much my husband loves me. He said, are you squeamish? And I started laughing. And I said, are you kidding? No, he's not. And he said, because she can come in twice a day and we can clean this wound and repack it. But if you'd be willing to do it, Les is like, sure. So the doctor showed him how to do that. And my husband, twice a day for almost 6 weeks, cleaned and repacked that wound. And if you're wondering where it was, yes, it was in my bottom. And you know, I talk to men, I talk to women, and I don't know how many people are like, I could never let my husband do that, or my husband would never do that, or husbands are like, I don't think I could do that, you know. But part of it is we'd been through so much at this point, you know. Scrolling. Okay. So back to words. Peace. The peace in this verse. Great peace have those who love your law. It means shalom. And shalom is not what we think it is. Gotta find the definition because it's very long. We think of it in our Western way of thinking that shalom is lack of warfare or a feeling, a peaceful feeling, contentment, calm, right? And do you know how the more excited you get about trying to find something, the harder it is to find? Ah, it's because I got the wrong one. Hold on. I need to do The Nancy, 2009. 18. Where are we? Okay. Shalom. Are you ready for this? I watched a 25-minute video on a Hebrew expert trying to explain shalom. Okay? So that gives you an idea of the complication of this verse. It means, among other things, perfection, wholeness, prosperity, financially, relationally with the Trinity. It means inner completeness and tranquility. It means healthfulness in your spirit, in your body, in your mind, and your soul. It means safety. It means completion. It means full of well-being. It means harmony between your soul, your personality, what makes you uniquely you, and the Godhead and the Trinity. It's quiet confidence forever. It's complete security, safety, and being fully at rest. I mean, that is not absence of war or a good feeling, right? It's so encompassing. In Matthew 5:9, when Jesus says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God," peace in that verse is shalom. So Jesus wasn't referring to mediators and political negotiators, right? Oh, everybody, let's get along. But to those who carry an inward sense of fullness and safety that is only available in a sonship with God, a daughtership with God. In the biblical Hebrew understanding of shalom, there is a point at which you have so much shalom that it spills out of you and is repaid or rendered to others. And so, as you make others peaceful and inwardly complete, that makes you a peacemaker. Get it? Yes. I know, I was like, Jesus said, the peacemakers, those who share that shalom with him that is so full in them that they share that and bring peace wherever they go, are called the sons of God. And by sharing God's uncontainable peace with others, we become just like Jesus. And that definition is from Doug Hershey in The True Meaning of Shalom. And I want that. And my husband demonstrates that a lot. He's one of those people that people just like to be around because he just calms them, helps them think more clearly, gives them a sense of well-being. Am I right, Doug?
Oh, yeah.
And he works at a job where he does a lot of negotiating with opposing sides, you know, him and whoever he's negotiating with. And one of his gifts is to bring that shalom because he has it in him. He's in work. It's not a church Christian situation, but because of his presence, he can pull that into the room. And those adversarial, intense situations can be resolved more quickly and can see each other's side more easily because of that presence. Yeah, I want that. Okay, what's the law? I gotta speed up here. Is it a bunch of rules and regulations? A bunch of do's and don'ts? Not necessarily. The Ten Commandments pretty well covers it, right? And we spoke on Ten Commandments last year. That was the theme last year. The difference that I really discovered in this is it talks about who love your law. Old Testament, it really was a list of do's and don'ts and regulations. The New Testament refers to it as the Word with a capital W, because the Word after Jesus is a living thing, right? It has impact. The ancient Hebrews used to believe that when you spoke of God, when you spoke God's word, his law at that point, or word, that it had a physical impact on the environment around you, right? And so there were some names of God that they did not say out loud because it was so holy that they knew it would have this impact, right? So when we're in the Word, Evelyn talked about this yesterday, if you were in her session, about have you ever gotten to the point where you're in something and you're digging and you see this word and two words don't always mean the same thing. Peace doesn't mean the same thing in every passage. And, you know, you dig and you find out the meaning and it takes you somewhere else and you're just, you know, that's loving the Word, yes. Right? You know, you're, how you spend time in the Word doesn't have to be like somebody else's. Somebody says, okay, here's your Bible plan. What you need to do is the first spend an hour with the Lord. First 15 minutes you pray and you just go, okay. Then you spend, you know, 15 minutes reading the Bible. And then you spend 15 minutes asking God and you write little notes. And then, you know, I mean, okay, that works. But that's not me, right? So what does it look like for you to get into God's Word and to love it and to research it? And Nancy mentioned something about when you have those verses that don't make sense to you and you don't understand. You know, Lord, there's a verse that says, you know, God gives you the understanding. I mean, people get saved all the time and they've never even heard the gospel, right? And it's like, Lord, give me wisdom. And sometimes it takes years, but my maturity and my understanding has to get to that point where it's like, oh, I get it. And it's not about perfectly keeping the law or his word. It's about loving it. Yes. And that's a difference, because if we can't keep it perfectly, we end up in condemnation, right? In self-condemnation. So if we love the law, we will have great peace and it'll keep us from stumbling. Okay, so what about stumbling? Yesterday, after Les was done and we were going to lunch, I said, okay, do I really have peace and poise? And he's like, definitely. You know, you never let what you're going through keep you from being anything but patient and kind to those around you. Now, that man knows that I wasn't always patient and kind. You know, I could lose it. I could sob and, you know, be angry at God and yell at God. And how many of you know it's okay to yell at God? He can handle it. He's God. Remember, God's God. You think he's surprised? Oh my gosh, I can't believe Laura's yelling at me. No. And kind of like the Psalms, if you're yelling at him, David, oh, woe is me. My enemies are against me. Just crush me. I can't handle it anymore. Boy, you know. But at the end of the Psalms, what happens? God, you are my God and you are mighty, right? That's what happens in conversation. Okay, so it's okay to yell at him. But he saw that side of me, those times when I wasn't kind and gentle and strong and, you know, and was frustrated and angry and, you know, again, God's blessed me with a great man. But he said, definitely, you didn't let things you were going through keep you from being patient and kind to those around you. He said, you were your doctor's favorite patient and their nurses. Told you about Dr. Wallen, his nurse came in. Oh, Kaylee, she was so sweet. And she's standing because I'm waiting with the infection to get in to see doctor and he's and blah, blah, blah. And she says, I know I'm not supposed to say this. She said, but I've been praying for you. And I took her hand and I was sitting in the chair and she was standing up and I took her hand and I said, oh, Kaylee, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I need everybody's prayers. And I get it. You can say that to me, you know. And she just had such a compassionate heart. She was awesome. So it's like, yeah, Christian doctors. And he said, people can't believe how well you looked with your great smile. He said, you didn't hide what you were going through, but you didn't allow it to become your identity. So three things about examples of how that can keep you from stumbling. 40 years ago, maybe not quite 40 years ago. Les and I were first married, and when I was in college, I had a professor that I had this big crush on. And shortly after we got married, Les was in his last year of college. He was hardly ever around. We'd been together since we were 15, but we were 21 years old. That is like babies. And we're trying to figure out how this works, being married stuff. And I ended up writing letters to my former professor. You know, so it was way before the internet and everything else. And we ended up with this letter writing, and today you would call it, I was having an emotional affair with Jim. I can't even remember his last name now. And I knew that it was wrong. I knew that it was only creating distance between my husband that I had been married to for probably less than a year, that I had been together for 6 years, right? And I chose to tell Les about it. I mean, he knew, like he was shocked, right? He knew that I was writing letters, and we talked on the phone a couple times, and I can't even imagine how easy it is today with the internet and everything else to fall into this. But by telling him, it shed light on it. And when there's light, darkness has to flee. And was it easy for me to cut that off because I had to cut it off? 100%. No. I mean, there was a heart tie, a soul tie there, right? Before I even knew what soul ties were. But he helped me, and God helped me, because I heard that voice, because I studied his word and knew his law, that this was not right. And I turned from that and turned back to my husband and God, because when you get to that place, you're not listening to God. And the farther you walk this way, the dimmer his voice gets, right? And it was hard. And it didn't take months and months, but I'd say it probably took 3 or 4 months. And, you know, then Satan would, and I'm like, no, I'm not going there. Kind of like Nancy's story about Henry with his knee, you know. I'm not, you got the wrong knee this time, right? But you got to keep on top of it. Because when you entertain something, it doesn't take much. If you start watering it, and you start putting some fertilizer on it, and pretty soon you're out in left field, and you wonder how the heck you got there, right? So, my relationship with the Lord, my love of the law, which was in my heart, caused me to know that it was wrong, and to turn from that. Another story, Kirsten. Kirsten makes my medical history look like a walk in the park. She's in her early 30s. She has a disease, and I didn't put it in here, that causes the connecting tissue in your body to be soft. Even your skin is very fluid. It's very easy to dislocate bones. The connective tissue in your body, so she was on total patient nutrition, where they're feeding you for 4 months at one point. She has been had hospital stays of 3 months before. She's in her early 30s. It's a hereditary situation. It's not a disease, so it's hereditary. And she has had battles, but let me tell you, this young woman's attitude is amazing. Talk about peace and poise. And she'll tell anybody, are you kidding? The only way I can walk through this is because of God. Les performed her and her husband's wedding in Ketchikan. If you're not from Alaska, you can get a special license to be able to marry anybody in Alaska for a 3-day window. And Greg has stood by her side. Oh my gosh. But if you think about her, she's currently in the hospital. She had a brain aneurysm because soft tissue, right? They did a procedure called coiling. not quite sure what it is, but they go in and close this off. She was, it wasn't working. She was going into distress. They came out. They decided, they waited a few days till she stabilized, went back in because it was pressing on her optic nerve. And she's blind in one eye because of this disease, this genetic disorder, this disorder. And she was in surgery. They were going to schedule it for like 1:30. They ended up taking her in at 10:30 because she was losing color in her eye. She was only seeing black and white, so they bumped it up. She went into surgery. She came out of it, and this was Wednesday. So like 2 days, 3 days ago. And I haven't heard any more updates on her, but she was seeing shadows. They were hoping that they could save her eyesight. And she was seeing shadows, but they were hoping as the anesthesia wore off, right? But like I said, her history makes mine look like, oh, give me mine, right? But like I said, her peace and poise through that, she enjoys peace and poise even in the midst of that. And like I said, I'm sure she rants and raves and gets frustrated and cries, but where does her strength come from? My strength comes from the Lord. The last one is my sister Jeannie. And she loves the Lord. She's just awesome. She has this very simple, very awesome understanding of God that I envy sometimes. And she is trying to quit smoking after 45 years. She feels like it's finally time. She feels like God's telling her, yeah. And she's struggling with it. And medically they will tell you that quitting smoking, nicotine addiction is one of the strongest addictions out there. And it's not only a psychological one, but it's a physiological one too. So you're playing with two things there. And she was getting to the point where she kept falling back. She'd go 3 days and then she'd smoke again. And she was really beating herself up about it. Well, before my surgery, my ileostomy surgery, the Lord told me I needed a prayer support group. And I said, okay, Lord, give me the name. So he gave me names of 6 women. And a year after surgery, I said, okay, we're doing good. Our purpose is done. And they're like, are you kidding? We're all friends now. We're like, no, we're keeping it going. So, and my friends have become friends. But she posted it on our prayer site. She said, you guys, I know God can't help me if I choose to do this, if I pick up a cigarette and choose to do this. And we all jumped on her. And it's like, don't you think God's bigger than that? Don't you? He's just going to let you, okay, waller around in that. I'm not going to help you at all. Yeah, that is wrong. And so everybody was giving her verses about the love of God and how he supports us through those things. And he gives us strength. And she was like, oh my gosh, you guys, thank you so much. And the point of Jeannie's, because she loves the Lord, she loves his law, she knows it's wrong, but her interpretation of it was skewed. And she needed those people that she trusts, those people that she knows are grounded to give her light on what the truth really is, right? And so that's my last point, is we love the Lord, we love his law, give us peace, keep us from stumbling. But if we're stumbling and we can't seem to get out of it, God made us as for connection. We are not islands. We are not alone. We are not, we need each other. And just like Jeannie, finally getting over her pride and her shame, saying, guys, I need help with this. And one of the things that we were able to bring light to was that misconception that she had, that God had abandoned her because she couldn't quit smoking overnight, right? So don't forget that. And I'll leave you with this. I talking with Les, all of a sudden the Lord said, remember? Right after I was diagnosed with Crohn's, I'm on my face before the Lord. I am literally on my face. And back in the 80s was the big, if you're not hearing from God or you have a problem and you're not getting your answer, then you have a secret sin in your life. Okay. Church goes through swings. We get a little excited about something. And yeah, you need to analyze, is there something going on? But don't get stuck on that, right? And so I'm like, Lord, is there a secret sin? I mean, I confessed everything. I confessed my great-grandparents' sins, right? You know? And nothing. And so I am just pouring my heart out to the Lord one day. And he says to me, Laura, I can give you one amazing, great miracle. Or I can give you tens of thousands of smaller miracles. And I said, I want the 10,000 miracles. And I've never regretted it. Somebody asked me, do you wish you'd done surgery earlier? No. Because my relationship with the Lord through those trials grew so deep and so precious. My prayer to God was, now that I have energy, Lord, and I can do things, don't let me lose this. And about 8 months after surgery, I'm frazzled, I'm stressed, I got too much going on. And I'm like, Lord, what's going on? And he just smiles down at me, and I'm like, palm to the forehead. Oh, yeah, okay, Lord. You know, and he's like, I knew you'd be back, but you needed to do that, to find your limit. But I would take the 10,000 little miracles over one giant healing back then. Because how easily would that have been forgotten when I have so many? So...